Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin, none of whom want to be here doing this today. So we are going to keep it short.
Well, to be fair to the listener, due to scheduling conflicts, we had to bump recording from midweek, when we tend to be a bit more energetic, to Friday, when I think we're all flatlining. So it's not that we don't want to do the podcast. It's that Fridays kind of suck.
We want to do it in theory, but like the reality is, no one actually feels like it. But you know what, guys? We're pros. That's the thing. We're pros. People are paying us money to do this. And we need to do it, and we need to do a good job, and we will, because we always do. Boys, we have actually a couple of things that I'm really kind of interested to get your takes on. Let's start with one that happened. I don't know. This was a week or so ago, and it was kind of a big deal in the sports and pop culture world, in that super famous female MMA fighter Ronda Rousey had another fight. Ronda Rousey, if you're not familiar, is sort of the Mike Tyson of MMA fighting for girls. She had a really amazing record and knocked everybody out really quickly, until a year or so ago she got knocked out herself by a fighter named Holly Holm, and this was her big comeback fight. And it was interesting, fellas, in that it was one of these things that, you know, usually boxing and MMA, any kind of fight sport, is like a fringe, like a niche of a niche, you know, and very rarely do people who would not have anything to do with those sports ever comment on those sports. But because it was Ronda Rousey, because it was getting mainstream burn in the media, the Gospel Coalition weighed in on this with what to me was, it was fun, because it was sort of like a vintage Gospel Coalition post, in that it was, we're literally telling you how to think about this. And I think even the title was How to Think About Ronda Rousey Fighting Again.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. How should we think about watching women fight women?
Yeah, how should we think about watching women fight women? Which, to me, like, I just got a huge kick out of it, because it was like, and I think it was, as it, Justin Taylor didn't write the piece, but Justin Taylor kind of teed it up. And I don't know, it felt like old school, like mid-2000s GCO. And much like the title would suggest, it was a long, like almost unreadable white paper on, like, I don't know, gender. The guy took like, 5,500 words to
six subheadings in this post. That's like six chapters on a blog post.
Yeah, it was kind of brutal. But then a lot of people read it, and a lot of people wrote, like, 1,000-word responses in the comment section, which, again, to me just felt very vintage GCO. Kind of like, who has time to do this? But I want to get your take on it, boys. I want to get your take on not only, watching women's cage fighting, thumbs up or thumbs down on that, but, kind of Gospel Coalition's involvement in the big – controversy that spun out of that.
Ronnie's the MMA fan, particularly Ronda Rousey, considering he asked 30 seconds before this, wait, who's Rousey? So
I have a lot to say on Ronda. I mean, Ronda, go back. We share a similar name, just to start out, to begin, so we share a lot of affinity for MMA and cage fighting and all things in regard to that wonderful sport.
Maybe she's a Joy Electric fan. Did you guys connect over that back in the
day? Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've already done 3 or 4 remixes for her since this piece broke.
And she walks to the ring to a Joy song.
She does. I mean, she said, "Hey, can you cue up something for me when I do my intros?" And I said, "Absolutely, Ronda. Anything for you, Ronnie." And absolutely. So let me turn this over to you, Pipe, because I have a lot to say on this, but I don't want to exacerbate the whole post here.
I appreciate you not stealing. I mean, because I don't have a lot of points, and so if you had talked at length, you probably would have taken what point I had.
Boys, this is scintillating radio.
So
this is already good. Already one of our.
What was the question again? Was the question, what do we think of women fighting women? How should we think about it? Like, I'm just pulling on the blog post right now.
That was part of the question, but the other, maybe more substantial part of the question was, What do we think about GCO's involvement and the sort of controversy that it touched off with RTHE and Jared C. Wilson?
Yes. Okay. So first things first, when it comes to sort of roles of women and complementarianism and all that stuff, I think that the vast majority of reformed complementarians take the implications of that way too far, in terms of deciding what jobs and then publicly stating what jobs women can and cannot have. You know, it sounds like we're making America great again is what it does. Like we're bringing it back to 1955. That's men's work. That's women's work, et cetera. And I know that they did their best to sort of give it a theological and sociological and physical explanation of why it's horrible for women to fight women. And I kind of go, yeah, but if it's their choice, like I know that that's not a blanket hermeneutic for decision making because people do dumb stuff, but it's really hard for me to get all worked up about it. So even if it shouldn't happen, I also don't think it's happening so much that it really matters all that much.
Yeah, how many?
It's not like our wives are fighting anyone.
Yeah, how many like female MMA fighters are there actually? That's what
I can name two. One of them is Ronda Rousey and the other is Holly Holm who beat her last year. I could not even name the one who beat her, you know, a week ago. And so it's, and again, I don't follow the sport that closely and others, I'm sure listeners are shouting names at their earbuds right now. The seven of you who watch women's MMA. I don't think that it is a cultural development that demands the kind of response it got. I think it is a cultural development that irritates a tiny subset of people and they're really loud about it. And then the people who don't like those people are really loud in return, which would be Rachel Held Evans responding to Gospel Coalition. So I think the tweet that like really lit the fuse was she said something like, she basically accused them of never standing up against social injustices and they're standing up against women fighting instead. So she's like, you know, we have a serial molester in the White House now and women fighting is the problem. And then, you know, of course that was bait that Jared C. Wilson and Justin Taylor and others could not resist responding to, which leads me to a question about these questions, which is, when will they learn that ignoring her is way better than responding to her?
Never.
I mean, are they capable?
I don't know, man. I don't know. The track record would suggest that they're not capable.
It's really tempting. I know it's almost like not being able to withstand the temptation of replying. It's like having it just like hang there is too much, huh?
Here's my question, Pipe. And maybe you can relate to this, man. I bet you can. When I was growing up, In our little town, there were these little like skirmishes that would escalate like in our neighborhood where you'd be playing with a kid day after day and you would almost fight each other a few times. And then finally, like you would fight, like you would have it out. But then after that, you were cool. And I wonder if the whole thing would not be healthier if Rachel the Held Evans at Jared C. Wilson and Justin Taylor didn't just get into a ring themselves. And fight it out, man.
Dude, that's a pay-per-view event right there.
That's a pay-per-view that I would watch. And not to get all Dana White, not to get all Vince McMahon on the thing over here, but I'm a businessman, Pipe. You're a businessman. We know people. We know venues. Why couldn't we make this happen? I bet this thing would sell like crazy.
I mean, do we combine that with live rant? I mean, do we do that all in one shot? You know,
maybe, I think the three of us just do.
And we could get Mark Mellinger to be the ring MC. You know, sort of the Michael Buffer.
Like, are you ready to rumble? Yes.
Yeah. He's got the smooth voice. You and I can be like the Joe Rogan at ringside, like doing the obnoxious commentary. I think this has legs.
And it would be such a satisfying end to what has become an obnoxiously endless Twitter feud. Like every feud needs to end in combat. That's how they end.
I agree. I agree.
Did you ever watch the miniseries Hatfields and McCoys?
It
was fantastic, and it ended when everybody was dead, as it should, because it's a feud. And I think that's what needs to happen here.
Okay, but hold on. Isn't there a – to help me – okay, so give me a little education, boys. So there's a difference between UFC and MMA. Isn't MMA, like, legit and UFC is, like
no, you know – UFC is a brand of MMA. So MMA is like saying football, and UFC is like saying the NFL. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, okay.
MMA is the sport. UFC is the brand.
And but doesn't MMA, doesn't mixed martial arts, or doesn't it have, I mean, it isn't, I thought UFC was almost more like the WWF or something. Like it was more of a joke. And isn't MMA kind of?
Well, I think it's, no? The UFC has kind of gone through ebbs and flows in terms of how well it's been managed and perceived. But I think like as a professional league, it's one of the, certainly in any combat realm, it's, you know, in terms of boxing or whatever, it's probably the best run out there, and they make so much money.
So you can take it seriously, is what you're saying?
Like there are
people who follow it seriously,
and they draw big ratings on either pay-per-view, or I mean they even show this stuff on sometimes on like network TV, and their fighters make good money, especially the top ones. They get big sponsorships, and they're as legit as to they're suspending people for drug use and things like that. I mean, so they have standards to which they hold their fighters. Yeah. It used to be when it first started, it was a madhouse. Like it was basically no rules, and so I mean, it was just brutal. The beatings people would take.
We used to trade those videotapes in the dorm in college back in the '90s. It was like, you know, you'd have some 350-pound guy fighting. Yeah, you'd have a huge guy fighting a little guy. I mean, it was nuts, man. It was nuts. And I really, being a boxing guy myself, like I'm not really into MMA. I've never really gotten into it. I couldn't tell you the last time I watched a cage fight. I find it kind of repellent. But yeah, to me, I guess the more interesting angle was, you know, all the huge kerfuffle that exploded after Geico threw their hat into the cage,
telling people how to think ring.
Oh, okay, yeah, which is a ring that they've been in forever. I mean, that's their ring, you know?
Yes, that's true. It's the funny thing to me is, like, they tell people how to think, but they always pick, like, the touchiest and most niche things. Like, that maybe it's because that's what draws clicks, but, like, really, that's where we're going to invest 2,200 words is on thinking about women fighting women. I feel like there are things that maybe deserve time and effort more than that one.
Well, you know what? That's an issue that really is germane to anyone in any church. I know you see it, Big R. I mean, just the problems each Sunday with women literally fighting each other in your building. I mean, you know, I know this is huge where we are. So it's good. I mean, it's good that thank God they're addressing that.
Well, we just decided to officiate it a little bit better, and we built a ring, you know, in the foyer, and we just have official cage fights on the second and fourth Sunday of every month now, only for women.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, you're gossiping about so and so. You guys, you're the number two ticket on next Sunday's ring. Like you're up.
Yeah, I mean, we just try to work it out. I mean, there's something in like Zephaniah, I think, that we could get to back that up with, you know, some old minor prophet thing about like, you know, judgment and suffering. I think we can use
eye for
that.
An eye,
it's going to go
tooth
well.
For a tooth.
Yeah, it's going to go
beating,
well.
Beating
gonna
for
go.
A,
I think we're going to start
for an insult.
We're going to start a new trend. Yeah, we're going to start a new trend.
Boys, I want to take this back in a more serious direction. And,
oh, good.
And, I want to talk about this hypothetical pay-per-view that we're going to promote. in which we have at Jared C. Wilson, Justin Taylor, and Rachel the Held Evans on the fight card.
Could we invite Nadia Bolz Weber, or would she just beat everybody down?
She would beat everybody down. She's literally stronger than everybody I just mentioned. So I think we maybe leave Nadia Bolz Weber out of it. Who's our fourth person on the card? Because we have to have two fights and then
well,
a championship.
You got to have another woman
Sarah
in there. That's not fair.
Who's Sarah Bessie?
She's,
I don't know Sarah Bessie.
She might be a little bit left of Rachel the Held Evans. She's kind of in that camp, you know. And so
now, could we get a like?
What about Jen Hatmaker? Why don't we just
now? She would.
Why don't we just keep it current?
You know, if we're really putting our promoter hats on, man, she would pull ratings.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I care about tickets, Big T. I'm all about tickets.
You're the businessman. You're the guy behind the guy. Of course, you care about tickets.
So that's what I say, Jen Hatmaker, and you know. Held Evans, and let's see what we can do with that. You know,
I'm going to throw another gin at you. Okay, are you ready?
Yeah.
Gin Wilkin.
Easy, okay? Pal.
God,
easy.
Baby, listen to me, all right? Gin Wilkin represents the sort of, you know, reformed women that, you know, we probably go to church with. So I think a Jen Wilkin, Rachel the Held Evans fight would be very compelling on some
level. But like,
it may be like
Wilkin, she does not wade into this crap online. Like she handles things like somebody who realizes that responding to Rachel Held Evans doesn't go well for.
No, she handles things like a woman. She wants to get into the ring. She doesn't want to write about it. She wants to fight about it. Write about it. Fight about it. That's the tagline.
Baby, that's the tagline. That's strong. On the poster. Don't write about it. Fight about it. Yes. Yeah.
So Wilkin against Evans. And what about this, man? Why don't we just get old school? Why don't we do like Kathy Keller against Jen Hatmaker or something like that? How about Kathy that? Keller,
man. No, too dignified. Too dignified. So
Lauren Chandler, Jen Hatmaker. You got two Texans.
Lauren Chan.
Yeah, you got two Texans. There's some aggression in that for sure. The Texans don't back down, or at least they pretend to not back down. Uh-huh. So
we'll invite Maddie Chan in to help us, do a little, color coordinating on that one.
He can
one,
help us
know?
Promote, man. Yeah, he can come to ringside and weigh in on that one.
Yeah.
So guys, talk about this. We've got at Jared T. Wilson versus Justin Taylor. Now, I've never seen either of these gentlemen.
I thought they were like a tag team matchup, because isn't this drawn along ideological lines?
Oh, yeah, this could be drawn along ideological lines.
Especially if we're trying to move away from the gender conversation, it doesn't really matter who fights who from that stance, right?
Yeah. No, you're right. So who would fight those two?
Well, I think it would be Rachel the Held Evans and Jen Hatmaker fighting those two. And at the risk of offending those two, I might put my money on the women folk.
Maybe.
Wow.
Maybe.
I guess you're not writing any books for Crossway now, Pipe. I mean, that's just that destroyed that.
Maybe somebody will share this with Justin, but I suspect he doesn't listen to this podcast. If he does, Justin, greetings. No offense. It's all in good fun, but I think you're going down.
AKA, please let us all write a book for Crossway.
Yeah, AKA, try,
but not one of the cheap ones that you don't pay.
Trying to char that bridge, not completely burn it.
Right. Hey, you know what? We're all just a bunch of fun, loving party guys here. You know, let's be honest. This is all just in good humor. And speaking of good humor, I wish I had a good humor bar right now to eat while I was talking about this fascinating topic.
What's a good humor bar? Like, does that go well with Youth Berry Tea? Like, what are we talking about? I don't know what that is.
No, it's just like an old school ice cream bar, right? So like
vintage.
Just a vintage, like vanilla, either with chocolate or strawberry crumble, like ice cream.
Oh, that
bar.
Sounds delightful.
I have one every night, man. I'm just hooked. I'm hooked
on
it.
You have a good humor bar every night.
I have a good humor bar every night right now, because obviously
is that the key to being like your super chill, easygoing, even keel self? Is a good humor bar every night? It's just that, is that what it is? Like, some people have a drink every night, but you do the good humor bar, and it just.
Well, because see, what happens is I take those things literally, right? Like, a drink doesn't calm me down, but good humor, like I just assume when I eat the bar, like, it gives me good humor. So like I just feel like, hey, they titled it for a reason. So when I eat it, it actually helps me.
Well, you know what I want? You know what I want to put out there right now?
Throw it.
I'm tired of this book publishing sponsorship stuff, man. I want a good humor sponsorship, and I want these bars shipped to our houses.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I want to get a case of these things on my front porch.
I mean, Big T, what if we got a sponsorship with Good Humor, and they didn't not only sent a case, but they sent you like a year's supply of Good Humor bars.
Oh,
something
baby,
epic like that.
You're still speaking my language right now. How do we make this happen? Do you
I don't
know any good humor?
Well, I mean, I feel like the way I'm talking about it right now, maybe somebody, you know, since the show now is up to what? How many listeners, Pipe? I mean, maybe somebody that works at Good Humor might hear the program and want to jump in and not only give us some sponsorship dollars, but some actual product, some ice cream.
Well, you know what I'm doing right now? I'm looking at the Good Humor website.
How does it look? Does it look like it's a fit for us and them, Big T?
It looks like there's never been a better fit for us. Is what I'm saying.
I mean, the rants would get a lot happier if we were sponsored by Good Humor, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the laughs would just be overflowing after eating. Because you know what we would do? We'd be eating our Good Humor bars while we're doing the program.
And listeners would love the smacking and chewing noises. Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, whatever, you know? I mean,
I'm looking for an email address so that we can we can approach them with a business proposal.
Okay, while you're looking for that pipe, here's what I want to talk about, man, because you know, we're kind of on the one topic show right now with the whole MMA thing. So, do you know what happened when Amy Bird got on there and said, "Hey, you know, this whole idea about like maybe these women, maybe they just want to fight because it's a little more legitimate than being like, you know, what women have been relegated to in these kinds of sports, which has been like, you know, ringside girls and all that kind of stuff." And then they kind of jumped on her, and I didn't really understand that. Did you catch
no,
that?
No, I tapped out after like four tweets of like escalating insanity.
How you said tapped
I just
out.
These things happen like four times a year, and at some point you watch the first two and you're like, "Oh, I know where this is going. I'm going to go do something else with my time than read these tweets or respond to them."
So I think she was making the point like, "Hey, you know, we can have an issue with whether women should be, you know, in the ring with one another." But he said, "Look at," I think she was making the point like, maybe there's something in these women where, you know, they're doing something that shows a level of skill and legitimacy as opposed to where women have typically been within these sports, which has been on the sidelines where people and men specifically have been objectifying them, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you the way that the argument was set up, you basically. If you are willing to make any dispensation that women can fight in any legitimate manner, you're just going to get attacked by the one side. So it doesn't matter if you're extremely opposed to that point of view or closer to it. So like Amy Bird's bringing in, you know, maybe a middle ground. But there is no middle ground. Like they're either, you know, it's like women stay home and have babies or – you know, or you've got, you know, feminazis. Like those are sort of the way that it was set up. And that's why the whole thing just kind of made me roll my eyes, because I'm like, well, that's not a conversation. That's an ultimatum. This is not how these things work.
Well, okay. So more importantly, Ted, do we have a good humor spot?
I know. Like, yeah, I was waiting on the email.
Not yet. I'm working on it. They're very coy on their website. There's not an easy... you know, contact us sort of thing.
If you were an ice cream distributor, would you publicize a way that people could ask for free ice cream?
You know what? Good Humor, I just discovered this, boys. They are like a sub-company of Unilever, which owns like 2/3 of the world,
yeah.
I think.
So, yeah, it's like, yeah, they and then Procter & Gamble. They're like the two companies that own everybody.
They're the two like evil empires.
The show. So,
we're already sponsored technically by.
Yeah, we are. We've already got good.
Yeah, they actually own Waterbrook Multnomah, who has sponsored us in the past, and they're about to buy Faith Life, who owns Logos. And so, yeah, like they already sponsor us, I'm sure.
And they own Apple Computers, which I'm on, and they own Blue Microphones, and they own my house, guys. They just bought my house.
Well, they actually bought you, and since your name was on the deed, they own the house. So, congratulations, Ronnie.
Right. Speaking of your house, Big R, if I may ask this, can we get a little update as to whether Trogues ever stopped back by on his way back through Ashtown?
The answer is a resounding no.
Okay.
He very much didn't stop by.
Let me just put it to you this way, and not to beat a dead horse, but he very much did not stop by .com.
Okay, so there it is. He asked for the address. He very much wanted to know where you lived, and then he refrained from stopping by.
Baby, he might have been sitting outside of the house for 2 hours, and I didn't know it, but he never came up and knocked on the door. Let me just put it to you like that.
Wow, baby, that's so mysterious, man.
It's very mysterious, and I think what we're finding out is it's we're finding out about a Trogues that we never knew, a mysterious Trogues
who you still don't know because he never stopped by.
Because he never stopped by, absolutely. Exactly. I mean, that's where I'm at with Trogues. I mean, and it's but you know, I think it just continues. It just, you know, what we're looking at is just an extension of the Trogues legend that is ever growing and being ever fostered by his lack of media, you know, overtness right now. You know, he's kind of laying
low. Trogues, though. The knowability of Trogues. That sounds like a G-Code post. Yeah. Maybe they can address that.
I just finished the article. It's 5,500 words.
That's good, baby. A nice
knowability of Trogues.
14 subheadings, yeah.
I just typed that up in the last 5 minutes. So let me click off here. There it is. Done.
I like it. Boys, let's do one more topic, man, and then get out of here.
Please.
We had a reader suggest a topic. I like this one. I think this one is good. She wanted to know which books we did not finish and why. And this sort of begs the bigger question. Jesus. When you start reading a book, do you feel like you have to finish it? Or do you feel like you have the freedom to bail at any time? So have you bailed on a book recently? And if so, why?
Dude. I feel like I rarely ever, and there's probably few books that I get to the dead, dying last page of, because I feel like most of the books, especially if they're more theologically driven, I feel like when I get to about chapter 6 out of 9, like they're just repeating themselves after that. I'm like, I got it. I'm done. I actually appreciate the point. Love the book. But I'm good. I got it. And then maybe like later on, I'll wrap it up. You know, if I'm like sitting around and there it was, oh yeah, I forgot. I missed that last two chapters. But yeah, I don't feel like super compelled. And then sometimes with those kinds of books, I'll end up skipping around a little bit, based on the chapter heading. So yeah, I don't have this like completist mentality with it at all.
I didn't know completist mentality was a thing. That's I like that term.
I just invented that.
No, it's really strong. I'm impressed. Yeah, for a long time, I felt like this intense obligation to finish books I started, and it was so, it ruined books, because I'd get like halfway in and I'd go, this isn't going anywhere, but I have to finish. And so they would just like stack up next to my bed or, be at, the little 50% progress bar on the Kindle, and it felt terrible. And I don't know why, but like 2 years ago, I was just like, wait, why do I think like this? There is no obligation to finish a book if a book sucks. And yeah. So I just didn't. Yeah. And it was freeing. It was immensely freeing. So, usually if I'm not going to finish a book, I put it down in the first 10 pages. Like I just, within the first 10 pages, I'm like, well, this book stinks. I'm not going to read this. Rarely do I soldier on to a point where I'm like, should I finish or not? So I read one by a guy named Seth Davis, who's a Sports Illustrated columnist. He's a biography of John Wooden. I made it about 2/3 of the way through, just like still trying to get to the part where I liked it. And it just never happened. Yeah. And as far as I could tell, he just had an agenda of like, he really wanted to show that John Wooden wasn't a saint. And I was like, ugh, this is just, it's like troll writing. It's good storytelling, but troll writing. And then I did the same thing with We Were Soldiers Once and Young. So this kind of amazing account of Vietnam, but it was so, like so much military detail about places I've never heard of and never been and can't really picture because it's all in the jungle. And so it was just like about halfway through the book, I'm like, I can't even follow this anymore. You know, it's like the Alpha Company was stationed here and 100 meters to their left was Charlie Company. And I'm like, I don't know who these – I can't follow all this. So
– yeah, that's like beat reports in a sports book, if it's too much on that.
I mean, dude, do we even have – I mean, who has time – it's like who has time? Like if something isn't really like captivating you, like how do we have – it's just not worth the time, right? Because it's not going to stick with you anyway. And it's not like there's some magic like leprechaun that lives in your house with you that literally checks off like, well, no, man, that's 890 books so far in your lifetime.
Yeah, I think it's
just keep finishing.
I think it falls in line with the same mentality of the people who write like the top 25 books I read last year, where there's like this completely fake but very heavy pressure to read and complete a certain amount of books instead of realizing the greater purpose of reading, which is enjoyment and discovery. And so if you're not enjoying or discovering, why keep doing it?
Right.
But because of that, like the book lists and whatever, you sort of had the sense of like, oh, I'm subpar if I don't finish. There are a few books I've finished out of obligation because they're classics, like Knowing God by J.I. Packer, for example.
Yeah,
I thought the first maybe half of that book was fantastic, and the second half was just a grind for me.
A lot of those books get redundant because they got to make them book length, and what they do is they become very nuanced by just sort of sussing out things that were already said and sort of breaking those things down. But you know what? That just gave me an idea, fellas. This is what I think we should do. At the end of 2017, we should have our top 10 favorite half-read books.
Oh, I like
it. Yeah. Dude, let's just flip it. Let's flip the whole genre on its ears, well, man. Our top 10 half-read
I have one for 2016, since we're still close enough to look back. I know we don't want to look back at 2016 because for real 2016, but seriously, 2016, that was the title. Was a Dallas Willard book, which I am still half reading, but not really reading, and now I've forgotten the name of it. 1 minute. Divine Conspiracy.
Part of the half-read books is we don't even know.
Yeah, Divine Conspiracy. I'm halfway through that and have been halfway through it for about 9 months.
But you feel like you should read it because it's a classic.
Because it's like knowing God-esque. And so
it's compulsive.
I'm going to finish it. I'll finish it in 2017. It'll just take me 12 months to read the second half of the book. And
baby, is it just me, or are there like a dozen books with the title Divine Conspiracy? I feel like that's like a movie title, Collateral. There have been like 15 Collaterals or Collateral Damage.
Or it's kind of like, you know, The Reawakening or The Awakening, you know, like the second. Yeah, exactly.
I just feel like Divine Conspiracy that's got to have been used.
Isn't our next book called Divine Conspiracy?
Yeah, our next book is Divine Conspiracy.
Aren't we working on something called Divine Conspiracy?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Collateral Conspiracy, The Awakening.
I love it.
Ted, any half-done books for you, Ted? Like not ones that you just read a few pages of and discarded immediately?
Yeah. Dude, no, there were a couple recently that I got really deep into and I just bailed on them right before the end. One was, Pipe, you've probably read this. It was the Oral History of ESPN. Have you read that one?
Andrew James Miller or whatever his name is? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really fun for like half of it. And then the next, the next 100 pages, I was like, I should finish this. And then by the end, I was just like, wait a minute, this book is only about who hates who and who slept with whom, and it's really a drag.
Isn't it like 550 pages long?
Dude, it's like 500. It's like 550 pages of, oh yeah, that guy's really cool and down to earth, or oh no, that guy's really a douche. That's the book, you know. And it just became kind of a drag, man.
Okay, but let's talk about this really quick, man, because that's interesting what you just said, Big T, and what you just said, Pipe, because it leads me into thinking this, like, there really is this weird thing where if we get deep enough into a book and it's not happening and we're like trying real hard to like it and to make it work and to connect with it, there's something super depressing and kind of oppressive about that, isn't it? Like it kind of almost like depresses you. I don't want to quit on it, but the fact that I can't get into it and it's a classic and it's something that everybody's loved and enjoyed, you almost start feeling like there's something wrong with you.
It's like a sense of inadequacy that you don't like the thing that somebody else recommended.
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's really why I'm afraid to read the book Silence, you know, the one that is all the rage right now. I literally have heard nobody say they didn't like that book, but I'm afraid to read it for fear that I won't like it and then it'll be my fault.
Okay, well, here's the thing, Pipe. So I read the book by, what's his name? Fujimoto? Our guy, Big T, what's his name?
Who, Kintobi Industries? I don't know.
Are you talking about Silence or which book?
The guy who wrote the book about Silence.
Oh, I don't know that one.
The artist.
Oh, Fujimoto.
Fujimura, yes. So he just wrote a book about the book, about the movie, you know, kind of a thing. And it was like this, you know, super art, like the packaging is over the top. It's like, you don't even see this kind of packaging in our industry. It was amazing. Somebody bought it to me as a gift and I was kind of excited to read it because it sounded fascinating. And I'm telling you, man, I have read the first chapter like 86 times and I just can't, I can't.
Yeah. It sounds like a drag, man. It just sounds like a bunch of navel gazing to me.
Seriously, people are already judging me for that right now. Literally the podcast has not been released and I'm already being judged for that right now. I can feel it.
It was a vulnerable moment, Ronnie. I'm proud of you for admitting publicly, like you put a name on it because you couldn't remember the name, but close, good effort. And
you put the wrong name on your struggle, but we knew the gist.
And then you admitted to this inability to get beyond the first chapter. And I think, I hope that a sense of freedom comes through that.
Guys, thanks for being there for me. Thanks for walking beside me in this.
Ronnie, you're so courageous. You're an inspiration to both of us today. I know you didn't want to do this, but aren't you glad you did?
I am glad, and I finally feel like a weight has lifted, because now I don't have to finish the book. I can move on to another half-read book. That'll be the first of my 10 half-read books of the year, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to getting into a new book that I'm not going to like. I'm going to try to like feel really bad about. But you know what's going to happen, Big T? Is I'm going to remember this convo. When I get halfway through that book, I'm going to be able to just put it on my stack of growing top 10 half-read books that we're going to be able to talk about in 11 months and feel real good about. Does that make sense?
We've done some good today on the program.
Oh, my gosh. Thanks, guys. I mean, I feel like this has been therapy for me. This is therapy. Yeah,
it's been therapeutic. Boys, we have done what we always do. We've wandered to and fro. We have one sponsor that I want to give the floor to Pipe right now, because it's been a long time waiting through this episode for Pipe to do his promo. So I feel like it's going to be the best thing about this episode.
And I mean, it's what everybody waited for, I guess, was this.
If it's even decent, it will be for sure the best thing about the app. So Piper,
we are so behind you. I mean, we are rooting for you for this promo like you have never been rooted for before.
Well, I'm going to try to make this really fast so that we can mercifully end this pile of podcast. Logos is our sponsor this week. They have sponsored us many times before. Go to logos.com/happyrant. Check it out. They just released Logos 7 a few months ago. So a whole new set of study features, a whole new sets of like library sets you can buy in there. If you buy through that link, logos.com/happyrant, you can get a free commentary by Charles Spurgeon as part of the package. And if you are a teacher, a pastor, a student, anybody who has to do significant, especially exegetical or study work in sort of the theological realm, Logos is a fantastic tool. So go check that out, especially if you work at a church and they have a budget to help you buy books and resources. You should definitely go check it out. So logos.com/happyrant. Go check out Logos 7. Get it and get a free Spurgeon's commentary.
Hey, Pipe, let me add to that, man, because I recently, because of their sponsorship, became a Logos user in the fall, and it is absolutely fantabulous. It's the money. I love it. It's been great.
Pipe, so, Big R, he's woken up. We've reinvigorated him today.
Man, I'm telling you, man, Logos, we should have led with the sponsor. This whole thing would have had energy.
It would have been incredible. It would have been incredible.
Because we're like using the products, man. I mean, we're not.
This is why we need the ice cream sponsorship.
We don't use. Right.
This is why we need the ice cream. Good humor
and Logos, man.
If you're listening. Wait, what did I say? What's the Shell Unilever corporation for that? Unilever. If you're listening, Unilever, we need you. We need a sponsorship. We need good humor.
We would also settle
bar.
For a listener just sending us ice cream.
We would. Yeah, what if listeners want to? Where can listeners send us a couple of, not boxes, but cases of good humor bars?
Well, I think they could direct message us on Twitter, and then we could privately exchange shipping information as opposed to publicly putting that out, because we wouldn't want like the Stephen L. Trogi's treatment where people just come park outside the house. That's weird.
That is weird. But what do we get? What do they get in exchange for those kinds of sponsorship?
We will thank them by name.
We will praise them and they're all, you know, all their progeny. We will bless them as blessed amongst listeners. I mean, it will be they will receive the gift of that.
Wow, they're going to feel so loved and affirmed, like you were today on the program.
I can already taste a strawberry good humor right now in my mouth.
Oh,
and it's delicious.
My goodness, baby.
Boys,
we got to get off the air. This has been
We got to be done with this.
Abysmal.
Too much. But you know what, Pipe? I need to promo next week's episode, because you and I are going to be together again, man. Pipe is traveling.
Oh, that's right.
Pipe's traveling down to Union University. He's going to make an appearance in my podcasting J-term course. The students are very excited. I'm very excited. And we will tape an ep with a live studio audience next week.
Excellent.
So if there are things, Twitter sphere, that you would like to hear us talk about with a live studio audience comprised of college students, hit us up. Let us know. Otherwise, we are very much looking forward to that. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. Resonate has helped us with our editing and mastering pretty much from the beginning of the podcast. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Mark and Jake do a fantastic and timely job with all sorts of podcast services. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast.
There's no better way to start your day than spending time in God's Word and in prayer. Don't know where to start? We have a free daily prayer podcast created to help you do just that. The Your Daily Prayer podcast delivers a thoughtful devotional and timely prayer to you 7 days a week. Gain inspiration, faith, and encouragement with daily messages in 10 minutes or less. To start listening now, search Your Daily Prayer on your favorite podcast app or visit lifeaudio.com.